The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show. I am Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy. He is up in Boise, was checking out NAU, both the women's and the men's basketball teams in the finals for the Big Sky. They win. They are in the tournament. Unfortunately, both of those teams lost, but it was a great story for the men, the 9 seed, making it all the way to the finals. Had a big buzzer beater a couple days ago against Eastern Washington, the number 1 seed, and then able to make it all the way to the finals, but just fell short. Then he's heading over to Vegas for the Pac-12 and WAC tournament. So a lot going on. I'm holding down the fort here in Phoenix, and so much to get to. Kevin Durant making his home debut for the Suns, or did he? Crazy story with that. We will get into that. Also have World Baseball Classic and spring training updates from Buck Martinez, the 2006 Team USA manager for the World Baseball Classic, also going to be broadcasting games here in Phoenix for Group C. And Team USA getting going here with some exhibition games as well. And the Devils able to advance in the Pac-12 tournament. So a lot to get to. Let's get to our rundown, brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you and taking care of your business. So where do we want to start? Let's start with the Phoenix Suns here. And if someone were to ask me, Arizona sports fans seem a little embattled, seem a little tense at times. What's it like for Arizona sports fans? I would show them the clip of this pregame. Kevin Durant getting his first start at home for the Phoenix Suns. Had already crushed it early on with the couple games on the road swing. Suns playing great. A lot of buzz in the building. And then Kevin Durant slips in pregame and then is scratched because of ankle soreness. And if you look at his ankle when he did slip, it looked like a right angle. So, like, of course that is going to happen for all of those Suns fans who paid probably a lot of money to go see that game, perhaps a historic game, and the start of something really, really good for the Phoenix Suns. Maybe an NBA title, maybe an NBA title in the next couple of years. But Kevin Durant goes down. Like, are you kidding me? You can't make this stuff up. When I started seeing it on Twitter, I thought it was a joke. I thought that my good friend Gerald Bourget, who does a great job covering the team for PHNX, I thought he was just doing a tongue-in-cheek deal. Nope. It was real. So good news for the Suns, able to have a dominant game still. Devin Booker showed, you know, what he can do. Terrence Ross had a great game as well. And Devin, it feels like things are starting to get unlocked a little bit for Devin Booker. He's able to kind of take that next step into ultra superstardom. And he's just been fantastic since Kevin Durant has come in. And he was able to take care of business, and it wasn't, you know, compounding the bad news. And who knows, this might be a one game thing. This might be a couple week thing, but like, this time of year is so crucial for the Suns to start to figure it out. They don't have a lot of time before the postseason to figure it out. They're probably good enough now that they can escape their first round matchup if they get a high enough seed, and depending on what the matchup is, that they don't need to have everything ironed out, but you sure would prefer it, you know? So it's just a wild time to be a sports fan. You literally, like, sports is the best reality TV, because like, a lot of the stuff you can't even fathom, you can't even make up. If you did throw it out there, it'd be like, yeah, that's too on the nose. What are you talking about? So something to look out for here for the Phoenix Suns. ASU able to advance against Oregon State in the Pac-12 men's basketball tournament. Not a great game from the Sun Devils. They were still able to find a way to win. Good teams do that. I believe the Sun Devils are a good team. But when you are so firmly on the bubble, if you're a Sun Devil, you would much rather have that be a dominant game. Just because you can't yeah, a win over Oregon State, the 11 seed, like you can't, you know, really hang your hat on that one. But if it's like, hey, we can't control who we're playing, but we can control how we play, and we dominated, this was a 30-point win, a 25-point win, that's something for the committee to at least consider. Now it's just, all right, a team that's doing fine. Now the pressure is on the Sun Devils, I think, even more to get a win against USC, which is their second round matchup, which they've lost to twice. And that first matchup here in Tempe, that was a tough game. And it really showed, you know, where USC really thrives, and ASU can struggle. This is a big, long team that USC has, where I think they can limit a lot of things for the Sun Devils. So going to be a crucial next 24 hours for the Devils. If they really, I think they still could get in with a loss, but a solid performance. But they'll probably need some help. They'll probably need some weirdness. And as we've seen time and time again, you don't want another team controlling your destiny. If you are able to get that win, you probably lock up at least an appearance in the NCAA tournament. And I know they want to, you know, try to get even out of that last four in and all of that. That is all gravy. You know, priority number one is getting into the tournament. So if they're able to get that win against USC, I think they probably have that locked up. But again, you never really know. And this is a team with, I think, if you take a step back, there are a couple bad losses on there, Texas State, namely, how they lost to San Francisco. That doesn't help them. I think if it's just a regular loss, it's not a knock as much as it currently is. But they also have some really good wins, and some really good wins on neutral floors away from Tempe. They played UCLA well, especially that first time they matched up against them. So we'll see what happens. But the USC win, I think, is one that probably pushes them over the edge. And you look, Warren Washington led the Sun Devils in scoring. You love to see that. I think that's going to have to be kind of a key for success. He led in scoring and played a fine game. Like it wasn't like that dominant performance he had against Washington State, and he was still able to get 15 points. DJ Horn, Des Cambridge Jr. get 13 points. Jemiah Neal came off the bench, had some really important minutes. If the deeper you're able to go, the closer probably Austin Nunez is to playing too. And I think he's really an X factor for the Devils as well. So I'm going to be very interesting to see kind of what comes out of that as well. Coming up next, we have Buck Martinez talking some WBC. It is a great time of year. Even if you're not a baseball fan, like getting out to spring training, it's fun. Just playing some hooky. The World Baseball Classic adds a whole different level to that. Some really cool local ties that I'm hoping to tell stories about here in the next week or so. But Buck Martinez has a great perspective because he was the manager of Team USA in 2006, the first year they did it. He had to convince a lot of players. There was a lot of wariness for players to go because they didn't quite know what this was. The ramp up time was a little bit different than what it is currently. So he has that perspective. He's a Blue Jays broadcaster. So he has a Team Canada perspective as well. And he's also broadcasting the WBC games here in Phoenix. So that's a really, he kind of can attack it from all sides and appreciate his time as always. So coming up next, we have Buck Martinez to talk about the World Baseball Classic.
So I guess just to start, you know, when you hear the term spring training, what excites you the most?
I think the thing about spring training is everybody is optimistic about their season. I think it's a great opportunity for young players to gain some experience around the veteran players. I think for new managers and coaching staffs, it's an opportunity to learn their team in a very relaxed atmosphere. And most importantly, I think for me, from the fans' point of view, you never have a better opportunity to meet the players. It's a very condensed atmosphere, very relaxed, as I mentioned. And I think the players are very anxious to interact with the fans. So it's a great opportunity for the fans to get an autograph, say hello, maybe take a picture with their favorite player. I think that's the beauty of spring training. It's a great atmosphere where baseball can really be kind of secondary when you have a chance to unite with the fans.
With the World Baseball Classic coming back, first time since 2017, you were the manager of Team USA in 2006. How have you seen this event grow over the years in popularity, not just in the U.S., but, you know, from other participating countries?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that the players themselves now understand the significance of the tournament and what a wonderful opportunity is to play, to represent your country. And in 2006, nobody really knew what it was going to be. We had a challenging time trying to recruit players because they were concerned about safety issues first and foremost. You know, you're going to ramp up to an intense atmosphere in a tournament play before you really have a chance to get ready for the season. So that was a concern. In fact, I talked to Chipper Jones just yesterday about it. And he said, yeah, it was a great opportunity, but we didn't have enough time to get ready. If you look back at that 2006 team, it was loaded with all-stars and future Hall of Famers, but we just didn't have enough ramp-up time to get ready like they do now. I think the growth of the WBC has been terrific, and now we're dealing with teams that are playing. Great Britain, in fact, will be there in Phoenix for the first round in Pool C. Teams that you don't traditionally think. The Czech Republic is playing in the tournament this year. So baseball has grown worldwide, and I think the biggest thing is that the fans have a chance to identify. We're going to see some great games in Phoenix with Mexico, USA, Mexico, Canada, Canada, Mexico. There's a great tradition there and a great history. So it's going to be an exciting tournament. And certainly that first round in Phoenix is going to be first class.
You've played at so many different levels. You've coached at so many different levels, been a longtime broadcaster. Can you take fans through what it's like, how different it is to, you know, rather than put on a major league jersey, put one that says USA and has the red, white, and blue on it?
Yeah, it's really unique. And I mentioned Chipper Jones. And when I made my official phone call or my initial phone call with Chipper, he said, Buck, I've been waiting my whole life to play for my country. And Derek Jeter basically said the same thing. And it went on and on and on. Everybody had a chance to put that uniform on. And it's a beautiful uniform. Team USA uniform is really one of the classic uniforms. But for anybody, you know, of course, being in Toronto so many years, I know what it means to the players of Canada to play for it. And the Blue Jays are going to have a couple of young minor leaguers playing on the Team Canada team. Ernie Witt's the manager of Team Canada. He and I were teammates in Toronto for a number of years. So Ernie has managed every team in the World Baseball Classic. So when you put that uniform on, and we certainly see it with the Latin American teams, Dominican, Venezuela, Mexico, Puerto Rico, they're just sky high. The Puerto Rican teams have a tradition of dyeing their hair blonde. And in Puerto Rico during the WBC, it's hard to find any peroxide to dye your hair blonde because everybody in the country wants to have blonde hair. Then that's a terrific event. I have had the opportunity to work two of the events in Japan in 2013 and 2017, and the atmosphere in Japan is phenomenal. So it's a worldwide event, and I think people have a chance. If you can't see it firsthand at the ballparks, make sure you watch it on TV because it's a terrific event.
Mark DeRosa is the manager for this Team USA, this iteration of it. What advice would you give him in managing this sort of team?
Well, DeRosa and I have actually talked about this as soon as he was named manager. Mark's a terrific guy, of course. He does a great job on television. He was a former major league player. And the biggest thing I told him was try to make sure you let the players understand the intensity of the tournament. Like I said, the first time, we didn't really know how intense it was going to be. And we were Canada beat us at Chase Field in 2006. We kind of thought, well, we got Ken Griffey Jr. and A-Rat and Chipper and Roger Clemens and all these guys. And Canada beat us, I believe, 8-6. And then we lost a couple of games to Mexico. So I think the intensity, you can't take anything for granted because, you know, we had a 14-inning game with Japan. And Alex Rodriguez drove in a winning run. But for Mark DeRosa, I think the biggest thing is to communicate to the players the intensity of this. I had the challenge of making sure everybody had a chance to play because they wanted to make sure they didn't lose time to get ready for their respective team. So I made a promise to every one of the players that they would all get a chance to start a game. And we would split up half and half. So I had A-Rod and Chipper playing third base. And in our only exhibition game, we played 14 innings. And Alex Rodriguez was playing in the 14th inning of an exhibition game, which doesn't happen very often. So for Mark DeRosa, I think he's got a hell of a coaching staff. If you look at the guys on his coaching staff, it's really impressive. So he's got Ken Griffey Jr. He's got Andy Pettit. He's got Dave Rigetti, to name a few. Dino Ebel is third base coach. So they have a terrific coaching staff, and they will be prepared to play. That's for sure.
Looking at this Team USA roster, what's your first impressions of the collection of talent they've been able to have this year?
I think the most important thing is to note that Mike Trout's playing. Mike Trout is arguably the best player in the game, and he is committed to this. And I think, you know, as players, during the WBC, all of the clubhouses in baseball will have the games in their clubhouse. They're watching. Everybody's watching. Every player in the world is watching the WBC. And now when you see this atmosphere, they want to be part of it. And I know just recently Clayton Kershaw backed out of it, but he was anxious to play in the WBC. Adam Wainwright's going to play in the WBC. What's he, 41 years old now? But it's an opportunity. But I think the biggest message that people should take out of this is Shohei Ohtani is playing for Japan. And Mike Trout's playing for Team USA. That speaks volumes about what the commitment of the players is for the WBC.
Buck, thank you so much for the time and the insight. Looking forward to hearing you on the broadcast here in just a couple weeks.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. I appreciate Buck Martinez for joining us, talking all things WBC. And it's an exciting time to be a baseball fan. I think the Diamondbacks will see some strides. I think this is going to be a really interesting kind of bridge year, seeing year two or like almost one and a half for some of these big time prospects. When you think of Corbin Carroll, how far away are we from seeing Jordan Lawler, coming off an injury, but he's back, but feels like this was a guy that's not going to need all that much time. And then a lot of young arms that might start in the bullpen, move up to the rotation. You can feel kind of the page turning and it kind of a new chapter of Diamondbacks baseball and a lot of homegrown guys. You look back at that draft that they had with so many draft picks in the top, like 70 picks. They've been able to hit on a lot of them. And, you know, back when that was happening, I had a series of podcasts with the coaches, with, whether they're head coaches or assistant coaches or people that were important to the process of every single one of those picks and what made them special and what made them stand out. And the intro was like, hey, if the Diamondbacks are going to be successful in the next 5 years, they need to nail a lot of these picks. And without really seeing the major league product yet, seeing the rankings, seeing the evaluations, like it seems like that is starting to happen. So going to be a fun season to watch the Arizona Diamondbacks. Let's shift over to the Cardinals now. NFL draft, Cardinals sitting at 3, have free agency that's about to happen. Curious to see what Monty Austin Fort does in that regard. I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of fringe deals. I don't know if the Cardinals are going to necessarily be like massive spenders, but really I think attacking the depth, and then trying to find like highline talents that might be a year away in the NFL draft. I get the feeling that they don't view this as just like a 1 year turnaround, but they might be able to reload pretty quickly too. And then really start to develop some things when you have a fully healthy Kyler Murray, presumably next year for a full season. Who knows? All that we know right now, health-wise, is that Kyler Murray is not going to be fully healthy this year. And we know that from the jump. DeAndre Hopkins, what's going to happen with him? The way I'm kind of viewing it right now is some of these proposals that I've seen, like, I don't think it would hurt to hang on to him at least until the mid-year. Like if you can make a mid-year deal for a team that is has playoff aspirations, maybe missing a number one receiver or another guy in that passing, maybe all of a sudden the price tag can go a little bit up just because teams get a little more locked in. When it's, you know, March, April, May, it's a little bit easier to be, you know, see the forest and not the trees. But when you're in the middle of it and you can see how close you are, all of a sudden maybe you overspend a little bit. And that's something that, you know, could help the Cardinals. In terms of the draft, seeing a lot of, you know, Will Anderson, you know, the Bears have the number one pick. They've already said we're open for business. Presumably a team is going to trade up to take that number one quarterback. Then you have Houston, who is probably going to go quarterback as well. Then the Cardinals. And you have a couple spots behind. You have the Colts, probably looking at a long-term quarterback. You have Carolina. The Raiders just got rid of Derek Carr. Detroit, what do you want to do after Jared Goff? You know, that could be one. You know, that's the Rams pick. The way the Rams are playing, maybe they're thinking, we're not going to be picking in the top 10, hopefully in the next couple of years. So maybe go grab that guy right now. You have the Falcons, who have Desmond Ridder, but is that the long-term guy? Carolina, maybe Tennessee, looking at some options here. New England, you know. Pittsburgh, how are they looking at in terms of Kenny Pickett? You know, I think there are some options for the Cardinals to trade down. So it's kind of a matter of, can you trade down and still get an impact player, but also like acquire a bunch of picks? Because this isn't going to be a one player turnaround, right? Like, you need as many options as you can. This is going to be the first time we see a Monty Asomfort draft. Very intrigued to see what that was. You know, Steve Keim, I think, did some things well. Drafting, especially particularly in the first round, wasn't really if you look at the track record, it wasn't really a strength of his. There were plenty of misses or plenty of cases where, like, you draft maybe the right guy, but try to put him in the wrong position, like Hassan Reddick. So what is the mindset of Monty Asomfort right now? I think him being a New England guy, how often do you hear about them trading back, just getting more assets, not just for this year, but potentially next year as well. So if you can trade back, really get a steep price tag, then I think that's probably the route they're going to go. And I think that's probably the right move. Now, you don't want to repeat history like with Terrell Suggs. And if you haven't seen our Terrell Suggs documentary, Sizzle, I suggest you check that out, because he talks about wanting to go to the Cardinals and the Cardinals trading out of that pick, and how much that hurt him and how much that hurt them in the long run, because they had the 16th and 17th pick, and both of those guys turned out to be fine NFL players, but not first ballot Hall of Famers like it's going to be with Terrell Suggs. So is there a way that you can trade down to 5? Does maybe Seattle, they just signed Geno Smith long term, do they want to use one of those picks though to grab a quarterback? Would you help a division rival if you can get a boatload of picks, which they have, and still get an impact player at 5? Maybe Will Anderson is still sitting there. Maybe it's an offensive tackle. Maybe it's, some of these other edge rushers that have really shown out. Maybe it's a defensive back. You know, there have been a lot of guys that have been floating in and out of those top 10 rankings. So there's a lot of options that you can go. And this is kind of why it's such a fun time of year. If you are kind of a person that's super into the draft, and I am, but it is, do you just go and try to grab that elite, you know, Will Anderson and just call it a day, and maybe you use that second round pick and trade back and then try to acquire more assets? Or do you take that very valuable pick, trade back, try to get multiple first round picks or multiple high level picks, maybe a player to help just replenish that draft capital? Because a lot of times, again, with Keim, they were already trading picks for players. So there were plenty of years where you would come into the draft and the Cardinals would have five picks, maybe six picks, or multiple seventh round rounders, but not a lot in day one or two. So very intrigued to see how Monty Austin-Fort approaches this draft. So again, this is a time of year where there are so many things we could talk about in just this hour. So many things that are going on, and it seems like every day there's something new popping up and another press conference and a million directions that you can go. So we appreciate you sticking with Sports 360 AZ for all of your high school coverage, all of your college coverage, pro coverage. We have our reporters all over the place. Eliav Gabay was at what we thought was going to be Kevin Durant's first game, and he was reporting on that. We have Brad traveling all over the place. I'll be traveling here in the next couple of weeks as well. A ton going on, and we are really working hard to put out quality stories and stories that no one else is telling, and we are not short on them this time of year. There's a lot of great things going on here in the great state of Arizona. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and have a great day.